Graham Talks Pats, episode 20. The Patriots haven't had a ton to talk about. We had Roger on last time. We talked a little bit about how that what AJ Brown's impact might look like. We talked a little bit about Andrew Rupchich, as a guy who was kind of coming on a little bit as a additional piece to that offensive line and adding to the depth. The other piece we talked about briefly was Julian Hills being placed on IR, which we'll get to in a second here, because we're going to be talking about a couple different things here, a couple things I've written about recently, one of which is looking at a couple preseason camp battles. And a preseason camp battle actually didn't include purposefully, even though it's one of the bigger ones in my mind, probably less meaningful, but one of the more interesting battles in general, is going to get its own. Its own, I guess, article, which I think might already be published. This was published today, so we can go over that a little bit as well. So I think the one we'll go after first is we'll just look at the preseason battles, because there hasn't been a ton of news in the way of roster signings or anything like that. We can talk a little bit about camp as well. Some of the notes that people have had on that, Mike Reese and whatnot. We'll talk about Gabe Akis, a little bit, but we'll do that in a little bit. We're gonna start with the five camp battles that are gonna be the ones to watch this summer. I think the first one for me that I look at is running back, specifically the RB3 slot, and that's what I talked about more in this article, which will be coming out fairly soon. Now, I think there's already sort of a little bit of a battle in itself between Travion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson. I think you can say it's very easy to say Travion Henderson's clearly the lead back, and I'd agree that he is, but I think you're going to see, Ramondre Stevenson continuing to fight for touches. Obviously different styles of back, very complementary, which is obviously nice to see, but you look at what Ramondre is able to put together in the playoffs versus Travion Henderson, and it wasn't really, honestly, what Ramondre put together after the bye in general. And he was a completely different player. Trevion Henderson's a great home run hitter, but, it kind of remains to be seen if he can be a consistent back. And if he can do that, he can, I don't think there's any reason he can't be, a Jahmyr Gibbs-like player, where he can spring these super long runs, but also be an every down back, because he has the receiving ability to do so too. He can block. I think for Stevenson, being able to capitalize on some of Travion Henderson's shortcomings, which is, being a more consistent rusher. Can you get 3 yards when we need 3 yards, not, negative 2 yards or 60 yards, right? Because those seem to be the options sometimes with Travion. I don't remember the specific stat, but I think it was, he went for like a carry of like -8, I think, against the Falcons, I want to say. Because Ramondre Stevenson was out then, you kind of lost that consistency, and you found a little bit of it then with Terrell Jennings, as a power back. But Stevenson was not the player that he ended up being later in the season. At that point in the middle of the year, when he was struggling with fumbles at the beginning of the year, and then just struggling in general throughout the middle of the year. But I think you did miss that sort of that element of, hey, we just need 2 yards. Can you get us 2 yards? And that hasn't always been the case with Travion. So I think there's kind of a battle in that between those two just for snaps. Beyond that, though, I'd say RB3 is a legitimate competition that I'm very interested to see what I'm very interested to see what that looks like, right? I think you look at it, you say Antonio Gibson's gone. I think the exact type of player Antonio Gibson is, where he can catch the ball, he's a fairly good runner. I don't think he was an amazing runner in New England, but he was a decent enough runner. Averaged over 4 yards a carry in the early stages of this past season. He can catch the ball, and then more than anything, he's a very good kick returner. Week two, returned that kick to the house against Miami. Special teams player of the week, AFC special teams player of the week. I think you're going to be looking for some of those sort of elements from one of the running backs, that make the team's third option. Obviously, I'll preface with this for a couple positions here, but obviously there's a possibility they, go to waivers and see if they can find somebody there, or, send one of those sixth or seventh round picks to a team that's going to cut a guy. instead of having a battle for him in free agency. But to me, the three guys that really stick out as far as as far as the depth there is Larrison, Terrell Jennings, Len Larrison, Terrell Jennings, and Jam Miller. And kind of for three different reasons. You look at Len Larrison. Larrison was a really, really impressive college player. Over 2,300 total yards. I think over 800 receiving yards during his final year at UC Davis. Last year in preseason, pretty highly touted as an undrafted rookie. Only took 7 carries, but went for 35 yards. Had a touchdown when they killed Washington 48-18 in the preseason last year. Broke his foot in that game. Never saw any action after that because they placed him on season-ending IR, but he'll be back now. It's been reported he is taking the RB3 snaps, or at least was at the very beginning of camp. I think a guy who's a little bit more established in that role as being like a depth piece is Terrell Jennings. He operated in that role last year, had a game where he took 11 carries. 23 carries for 73 yards, not fantastic stats. Did have a touchdown in there as well in the 7 games he played. Missed the end of the season due to a concussion. 3.2 yards per carry, admittedly, is pretty low. You look at where he was used, though, a lot of it was those situations where it's, hey, 3rd and 2, can we get 2 yards? And he can. And that's something I'm not always super confident in Ramondre Stevenson to be able to do, is be able to use that power and, force his way into, getting those first downs when the going gets tough. 11 for 35 and a touchdown against Atlanta. We talked about that game a second ago when Ramondre Stevenson was out. Once again, not a spectacular yards per carry, metric, just a little bit over 3. Touchdown was nice though to see that, and obviously, as a one game fill-in, I think he's a very respectable player in that role. Jam Miller's also kind of interesting to me. He's the only player who was actually a draft pick. None of these players, by the way, Larrison or Jennings or Miller, I guess, as well. None of them have been on any team other than the Patriots. Miller has not played a game yet for anyone, given that he was a rookie, or he is a rookie now. 245th pick at Alabama, 130 carries, 504 yards, 3.9 a carry. Ran a 4.42 40-yard dash, 5.10, 209. You understand why is an appealing guy to draft later on. The yards per carry, 3.9. It's a little cosmetic to, be like, oh, 3.9 versus 4 yards a carry. I don't know what 130 times 4, we'll look that up. So 520 yards versus 504. If he had 16 more yards, would you really have felt very differently about his season? Probably not. I'll go out on a limb there. But, Alabama's running backs in general, I don't think any Alabama player that took more than 20 carries on the year had 4 or more yards per carry. It just the offensive line this year for Alabama wasn't very good. Caden Proctor was one of those guys to me that you take him at the end of the first round, you like his size, but I'm not sure, how consistent he's been. And I've said this a million times, I'm not an offensive line expert, but that's a little bit of a concern for me. Especially it should be a concern for Dolphins fans too. It took him 12th overall. But I mean, you look at the overall makeup of Miller, and I think he's a little bit of an exciting, flyer to take in the 7th round. Given the dynamic kickoff style in the NFL, I think he could benefit from that. We saw Antonio Gibson have that role at the beginning of the year, and then D'Ernest Johnson eventually, step into that role towards the end. But he's a guy to me that could be very interesting. My prediction on that was this on the article was that Len Larrison is going to make the team as the RB3, and that Miller's going to be on the practice squad. Jennings, I said, is going to find a home elsewhere. To me, I just think you don't want to be going into year three with a little bit of NFL experience, but not having carved out a role on a team yet. I think the Patriots would happily offer him a practice squad spot. I just think he's going to try to go to a practice squad elsewhere where he feels maybe there's more of a chance to get legitimate touches. Alternatively, he could stick around and say, hey, Len Larrison's not an established player. If he has a fumble early on, maybe I can get a chance again. But that's my prediction for now. And the second camp battle we can look at, I'm recording this on Zoom, by the way, so I only have 40 minutes. So it might be a little bit of a shorter episode. But tight end was the second position battle I wanted to look at. To me, the three guys there, Jack Westover, CJ Dupree, Tanner Arkin. Last year, the Patriots started, you could call it with two tight ends. I'd really call it, or you could say with three tight ends, you could say they started last season with two tight ends. I'd probably say you started with two. In Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper. Jack Westover, I think at that point was still seeing snaps as a tight end, as a more traditional tight end, as well as fullback. Only played 75 inline snaps all season, but he was the fullback last year, and I think now they're gonna allow him to make that transition back to tight end with the signing of Reggie Gilliam. I think he's the highest paid fullback in the league in terms of total contract value. Yeah, I mean, to me, Jack Westover probably is the guy as that third tight end if you're going to take one, just because he has the experience from last season, played a lot on special teams. He's a good enough blocker for a tight end, for a third tight end, what little they're going to see. Personally, I would like to see CJ Dupree or Tanner Arkin, a couple guys who are given pretty hefty, guarantees as undrafted rookies. To me, I'd like to see, a Dupree, a Tanner Arkin. I kind of would like to see them on the team over Westover. They're younger. I think you can quote a, you maybe you could say they're worse, if that's even true. I don't know it to be. But I'd kind of have a lot more. I'd have more interest in seeing one of them play. Dupree got promoted to the active roster, I think right around mid-season, was inactive for most of the year. I think he only played snaps in the week 17, week 18, combined 80-20 score against the Jets and Dolphins in those last 2 weeks. Tanner Arkin, two-time captain at Illinois. I think that's the sort of guy that you really like to have on the squad. I don't know if you're going to be able to break. They're going to be able to break the roster over Jack Westover. My prediction was that Westover keeps him on the roster. Dupree and Arkin are signed to the practice squad. I don't know if Dupree specifically is going to make it to the practice squad. There are rumors about him, other teams trying to sign him off New England's practice squad, and then that's why he part of the reason he was elevated last year. So I would like to see Dupree or Arkin make it over Westover. I'm not a fan of Westover's, but. First only fullback in Patriots history, from what I could find, to have 0 positive yards rushing or receiving in a 16/17 game season, 14 game season as well, I guess. I don't have much interest in seeing Westover, but I do think he'll probably end up staying on the roster. The next group I talked about was wide receiver, and Kyle Dixon, Cam Dorner, Jimmy Kibble, who I'm working on getting an interview with. I talked to him on Instagram. He said he would do it. I got in touch with Patriots PR. They've kind of been back and forth with me and then went ghost. So we'll see how that goes. But it would be cool to get him to have a chat with him for a little bit. Kayshon Booty, Pop Douglas, Kyle Williams, Efton Chisholm are the guys we're going to talk about here. To me, Kayshon Booty, regardless of what people say, I don't think he'll be on the team in 2025 or in 2026 rather. I remember seeing this on Patriots PATR1 OTS, and I saw it and I agreed with it, and I didn't even really think of it as a legitimate possibility, but I actually agree with it on this article here that both Kayshon Booty and Pop Douglas won't be on the roster come week one. I think Pop Douglas is a good player. I just think Pop Douglas is really easy to find, and they're both in contract years. I think Kayshon Booty, if you get a fifth or sixth round pick for him, I don't think it would happen until closer to the start of the season, but I think if you could, 2 months from now, get a fifth or sixth round pick for Kayshon Booty, and then Efton Chisholm and Kyle Williams continue to show development, I don't think there's a ton of reason to keep Pop. I know that Kyle Williams is mostly an outside receiver. I think you could see him try to make that transition into the slot. I think you're going to see an uptick in snaps for Chisholm. So that was my prediction for this. Is that Booty's traded late in the offseason, Douglas gets cut, and then Williams and Chisholm see snaps in rotational roles. I think Williams probably won't see a major uptick. I think Chisholm is a guy who probably could see a greater uptick in snaps given his role as a slot guy rather than Williams, who played, I think, close to 90% of his snaps on the outside last year. He's been competing with guys like Dobbs, who played only 13% of his snaps in the slot. You've got AJ Brown, who has a little bit more flexibility to move around, but I think you got him to be that X receiver, that Z receiver, be one of these bigger guys on the outside. So, not to say that a Cam Dorner, a Kyle Dixon, a Jimmy Kibble couldn't make the practice squad, but to me, I think the core group, I mean, you look at it, you say, AJ Brown, Romeo Dobbs, Mac Hollins, Kyle Williams are all roster locks no matter what. And then Ethan Chisholm's more highly touted than the undrafted rookies this time around. And then you look at the other two in Pop Douglas and Kayshawn Booty, and both of them are in a better position to make the team. Maybe if a guy like Cam Dorner really performs or something like that, maybe Pop Douglas gets pushed off the roster, but at that point you're keeping seven receivers still. The other piece I'd say would be, you're looking at, trading Kayshawn Booty later into the offseason. Like, best case scenario, one of these guys is the sixth receiver, which isn't to be unexpected. But I think there's other positions where, you could stand to keep more depth. But yeah, as I said, my prediction was that Booty gets traded late in the offseason, Douglas gets cut, and then Williams and Chisholm see snaps in rotational roles. Talk about linebacker next. There's only two more, linebacker and corner, which we'll go over. But at linebacker, to me, KJ Britt, Chad Muma, Nnamdi Obiazor, and Khalil Jacobs are the guys to look out for. KJ Britt, to me, is the clear-cut three, at least on the depth chart right now, probably. He's a guy that Vrabel and company went out on their own to sign, not a guy that they inherited. They signed Britt to a one-year deal. It was worth a little bit over $1.2 million. So cutting him does literally nothing. I think they take half of it in dead cap, so taking 600 grand in dead cap, which is nothing in the grand scheme of things. Chad Muma is a guy they signed off the practice squad, off Indy's practice squad, in December of last year to fill in for, I think it was an injured Robert Spillane at that point. He played a lot of snaps on special teams throughout the playoffs. I think you like his speed. Former third round pick out of Wyoming. I think him and Logan Wilson might have played together there, actually. I think him and Devin Lloyd were both picks by the Jaguars that same year. I think that would have been 2019 or 2020. And obviously, maybe a little bit later on, actually. I mean, Devin Lloyd he just had his fifth year option. Yeah, so I think that might have been 2020 then. But yeah, I mean, to me, Chad Muma is a guy that maybe because he spent a little bit of time in New England last year, he's built up some goodwill. Obviously, Jeremy Springer likes him enough to keep him on special teams, which I think you like. Maybe he can find his way into a Jack Gibbons type of role. I think that could be interesting. Another thing that you got to look at is, the Patriots talked a lot, specifically Elliott Wolf talked a lot about, the depth of the linebacker class this past year. To me, they took a linebacker on day three, Nnamdi Obiazor out of TCU, and then they signed Khalil Jacobs, who they had three meetings with as an undrafted rookie. Jacobs, to me, seems more like a practice squad guy, but Obiazor is a guy that I would not be surprised at all to see him, A, play a major role on special teams, and B, break into that rotation a little bit. You saw a little bit of Mane Mapu last year. You saw a little bit of Jelani Tavai. Obviously, it was more than anything was Jack Gibbons as that third linebacker, but, the whole depth of the second level at linebacker has been cleared out, right? You traded Mane Mapu after originally releasing him. You released Tavai. Jack Gibbons walks as a restricted free agent, and you don't re-sign him. So, yeah, to me, you look at Britt, Muma, Obiazor. To me, those are three guys that are in prime position to make the 53. They're going to see a lot of special teams work. They lost almost 1,000 snaps between the three guys that left this past year. And like I said, I think Jacobs is probably a practice squatter. And we'll go to corner as our final piece here. Corner, it'll be very interesting to see. Kendall Vildor, they signed. That was a signing I actually called, which I was pretty pleased with. He's not that great, Kendall Vildor, but Over 2,400 defensive snaps in 6 years, 164 last year with the Bucks. Career percentage rate allowed is 67%. 15 touchdowns allowed to two interceptions in his career. He's had five missed tackles in the last 3 seasons, which definitely sees, shows how short a tackler he is. You know, is he some top dog that you want starting for you? Probably not. I think he's right now, just off name value, he's probably your fourth corner. I think he could easily get pushed off the roster by one of these two guys, though. I do like Vildor, but I like him as a depth player, and I think fourth being your fourth corner is a little high, to be honest with you. After Alex Austin got placed on IR last year, you saw a lot of Charles Woods. Just a stat on Charles Woods is he played in 13 games last season. And he played 10 or more snaps 3 times in the first 8 games. He did that in each of his last five. So in five of his last 5 games, he played 10 or more snaps, which is, shows the reliance they had on him later in the playoffs, especially when Carlton Davis went out at times against the Texans and Chargers in the playoffs. You saw a lot of Charles Woods. 60.3% of his defensive snaps came from week 15 onwards. So I say in the article, recency bias, I think might favor him a little bit. Woods was also a waiver claim. Patriots claimed, see if I can remember them all, was Tommy DeVito, Charles Woods, Eric Gregory, and someone else at the very beginning of last year. And, I think all of them, showed they could play a little bit. Obviously, Tommy DeVito didn't see a single snap, but obviously, whatever they saw behind the scenes, they liked him enough to re-sign him and give him the nod over Dobbs to be the backup this year. So, that's definitely a piece to look at. I signed one other guy. So I'm trying to remember who it is. It might have been Corey Durden. I'm not exactly sure, but that'd be something to look into, I guess. The third corner that I think is a guy to watch here is Caron Prunty, and there's also another guy I can talk about in a second. He's more of a special teamer more than anything. To me, he was a little bit of a surprise fifth round pick. I didn't know about him before the Patriots selected him, but he was a 5-year college player, ACC starter, allowed a sub 50% completion rate in 2025, 4.45 40-yard dash his pro day. I think at least early on in his career, maybe that draft status and the recency bias kind of favors him, similar to Charles Woods. Marcellus Dial is another guy who I didn't include in the article, but has some ties with Jeremy Springer from 2024 with Jerod Mayo when Springer was there as the special teams coordinator. Obviously, Springer was retained by Vrabel this past year, but he missed the entirety of 2025 with a torn ACL. I'd be curious to see, if Dial, has if he's healthy. I think he's another guy that could potentially make the roster. He was a pretty good special teamer for them. In his rookie season, so that'll be something that's pretty interesting to look at. And I think potentially if you're going to go down to five, six corners, obviously those guys need to have value on special teams. You look at the guys who are playing a lot last year, other than the three starters. You saw Charles Woods on the roster. You saw Alex Austin, who was special teams ace for them. Miles Battle. So those guys obviously all had special teams value. And to me, a guy like Woods, a guy like Prunty, and definitely a guy like Vildor, who has played pretty extensively on special teams in his career, like all of them check that box. Prunty being a guy with the speed and the athleticism to get downfield there, and especially on punts, make a difference. Kobe Miner's a guy who they've entrusted with that role a little bit and did that towards the end of the year. So I'd be curious, Mr. Irrelevant out of Memphis, if he can make a push for the roster. But to me, those are some of the things to look out for, at least in preseason. I did omit one bigger, I guess group, and to me that's the defensive tackles. That's because I made an article on them specifically last night. To me, it's just you look at the defensive tackles. I think it's a really deep group. You lost Kyrus Tonga, but to me,
you look at the starters, it's Milton Williams, it's Christian Barmore, who are obviously the highest paid players, and then you've got Corey Durden, who established himself as one of the league's most underrated talents later in the year there, and I think he's going to get paid, whether it be by New England or someone else. You look at the depth pieces. To me, they roster 9 defensive tackles in general, but the guys I put under depth pieces, Leonard Taylor, Josh Farmer, Eric Gregory. Gregory, they all kind of played similar roles to one another last year as a fourth, I guess fifth defensive tackle if you add in Durden and Tonga. But especially when, different guys missed time. Milton Williams was missing some time in the middle of the year there. Tonga missed some time. You saw them all step in, and they all played fairly well. Josh Farmer, I think, probably was the worst of the three, but they traded up to take him in the fourth round, which I think definitely means something. Gregory is a nice nose tackle, potential nose tackle option. I think Taylor, coming out of college prior to his final season of college, people thought he could be like a top 10 or 15 pick in the entire draft. And he's showing a little bit of that this he showed a little bit of that at the end of last year. Thought he was very disruptive. I also thought, obviously he blocked the kick or tipped the kick on against Denver. To secure the win for New England to stay up 10-7, in that Blizzard game. So he saw 14 or more snaps. Taylor did week 17 and onward. 10.9% pressure rate. So like I said, quite disruptive in there. I think that has a lot of legitimacy. I think Farmer. I say in the article you'd have to have a pretty disastrous summer to miss out. And I think at least one of Taylor and Gregory seem like they're going to make it. They kept 6 defensive tackles last year to start the year, if I'm not mistaken. To me, they're going to keep at least 5 in my recent roster prediction, which I can go over as well. I'll probably make some changes to it looking back. So maybe I'll save that for a little bit. But yeah, I had 5 defensive tackles making it, and I probably in hindsight would up it to 6. As far as long shots go to make the roster, you got a couple of UDFAs and Jeremiah Farms. It's Jeremiah Farms, David Blay, and Travis Shaw. Travis Shaw, former 5-star coming like out of high school, originally a UNC commit, played there for a couple of years before transferring to Texas this past season, spent a year there. He is a nose tackle. He is 350, almost 350 pounds. There's a big, big guy. He's going to plug the run for you. Only played 184 defensive snaps this past year, which is definitely a little bit of a concern. Maybe that's a conditioning thing, and NFL strength and conditioning programs can put him in the right headspace and get him off on the right foot to start his career. But that'll be something that's a little bit something that's definitely needs to be considered. If Travis Shaw is playing any sort of meaningful snaps, obviously he's gonna probably need to play more than 10 to 12 in a game, which is what 184 would roughly round out to, I think. So yeah, to me, I think that might, lead you astray from Shaw. Blay was really productive at Louisiana Tech, which was Milton Williams' alma mater. So you could have a second Louisiana Tech, former Louisiana Tech player on your defensive line and then interior defensive line room. Transferred to Miami this past year, though, won the national championship with them. Wasn't nearly as disruptive, but unlike Shaw, played a lot. He played very extensively, played 412 snaps on the year. PFF lists him as starting at nose tackle, which I think might help his cause a little bit. I'm not an offensive line expert, I'm not a defensive line expert, I'm not an X's and O's expert in general. So to me, a guy like Blay, who is a plus run stopper, obviously was good enough at the at a lower level at Louisiana Tech to get the call up to go transfer to Miami is quite impressive, and that's the sort of guy that you want to add to the depth of your roster. I just think there are guys above him at the position that are better options. You look at a Jeremiah Farms, He's a veteran. He's going to turn 30 during the season. He's a tremendous story of, dedication to the sport of football. I find it hard to believe he'll make the team. Played a couple games last year. I think he totaled 50 defensive snaps across across 3 weeks, three different call-ups. Played for two community colleges. Ended up playing NAIA. Played arena football. Played in the USFL, and then eventually went to New England. Got a 2-year extension, but from New England. It's a couple of years, or I guess at the beginning of this past year, when he was a free agent. So he's an impressive guy. He's an impressive player. And he's a guy that I'd like to keep around on the practice squad. I think that he's not going to have a ton of other suitors. And I think the fact that Vrabel's, group extended him last year means something. And yeah, I don't find any of them as guys who are likely to make the roster, but I do think they could, continue to develop on the practice squad. Maybe a year or two from now, you look at it and you say, hey, Eric Gregory's not on the team anymore. Leonard Taylor's not on the team anymore. Josh Farmer, he hasn't, panned out the way we're hoping he could. David Blay, Travis Shaw, you guys step in, see what you can do, and continue to supply Zach Kerr and company with that great pipeline, the defensive line. So that to me was an interesting topic, just looking at some of these camp battles. We'll talk about Akers briefly. I think the tough thing about Akers is, apparently there were more injuries to him than the Patriots thought initially, and torn labrum might be part of that, which would see him miss some time. I think the expectation would probably be that he would start the season, but he strikes me as a guy that could be on, PUP at the beginning of the year. I think the main dispute is that if Akers 2 years from now hasn't played a snap for New England and can't play, a snap for New England because of his injuries, Robert Kraft and company don't want to be on the hook for paying him a couple $1 million. So it's understandable. I think the idea is that he wouldn't be able to play anyway, even if he had signed the contract. But until that happens, guys like Braden Swinson are going to continue to look to perform, try to establish themselves as one of those players that can make a difference, especially for a guy like Swinson, who was pretty highly touted coming out of college despite being a fifth round pick, led LSU in tackles for loss and sacks during his final year in Death Valley. He's a guy that, along with Elijah Ponder, can be a potentially really solid depth option behind Draymond Jones and Harold Landry. And you saw Landry miss some time last year. Like, there are going to be opportunities. And Mike Smith once again talked about how, what a great player Elijah Ponder is. Talked about him last year too, as a guy who you look at and you say, hey, this guy's got tremendous athleticism. We really like, the potential that we have with him. I think that would be something that would be really interesting to look at. I mean, to me, I think, the roster battles are a very interesting thing to me. Gabe Akers is obviously continuing to try to get healthy and prepared for the season. I think he would be a big addition to this team. I'll be curious to see exactly what the team looks like on the edge if Akers isn't able to play. I think that's a group that or a group you could look to add to, whether Akers were to come back or not. Obviously I like the idea of giving Swinson opportunities, giving Ponder opportunities, but if they're not able to show that in preseason, do you try to go after a guy like Alex Highsmith or Kayvon Thibodeaux, who could be available? Obviously, we saw Grenard got dealt earlier this offseason for a couple third round picks. I think it was during the draft, if I'm not mistaken. That seems a little aggressive to me. I don't know if the Patriots are going to give up 2 third round picks for a guy like Grenard, although Grenard is a very good player. It's difficult, I guess, because you want to give your young players opportunities, but you have the Super Bowl window right now, and you don't want to mess with
trying to save a couple million bucks at the expense of a Super Bowl. Also be curious to see them hit the waiver wire potentially in 2 months from now when teams are cutting down their rosters. Do they see a guy that that was maybe a draft pick a year or two ago, or was a rookie this year, or even a veteran who you like and you think could potentially give you a little bit of juice. I will say, I think even though he didn't offer a ton as a pass rusher, I was always a huge fan of Anthony Jennings, and I didn't really understand why they released him. I understood that you saved a little bit of money from it, and that if you were looking for a different style of edge rusher, you understand that that's a reasonable move to make. But obviously, you were also assuming that you were going to get a defensive lineman, or add a defensive lineman through the draft, which you did in Akers, but he just might not be available, which is obviously a major, major problem. So I think now I think at this point with the offseason, there just isn't a ton to talk about. I think the players went home on Friday for the weekend and all that. I will try to get a Jimmy Kibble interview. I'm still looking into that. That'll be really fun if we can get that together. I'm just looking here if there's anything else that I've written about recently I want to talk about. Jawan Williams, a former second round pick, started a career as a coach for the Commanders. Devin McCourty has some faith thinking that New England's going to return to the Super Bowl. I did talk about three trades, one of them being Alex Highsmith. Jaleel McLaughlin being swapped for Pop Douglas was another move. It's kind of a nothing move, but I thought it could make some sense if you're trying to add some competition for that third running back slot. Obviously, more experience than Larrison, and Jam Miller and Terrell Jennings, also more productive than Terrell Jennings in his 3 year career to this point. I'm trying to think. I just don't want the pod to end too abruptly, because of the cutoff of the Zoom, because it doesn't tell me exactly how long it is. Kayshon Booty being dealt. I had that in the article as well. Late round pick, fifth, sixth round pick, but to me, that's something that wouldn't happen for a little bit anyway. We can talk a little bit next time about, what should be an interesting group. In the quarterback room, I'll be curious to see how Baron Morton performs in preseason. Talk a little bit of Bills probably because. And they're once again very high in the odds. I think they're fourth overall, have better Super Bowl odds than the Patriots, despite the Patriots adding to a team that already made the Super Bowl last year. I think it'll be interesting to say the least, I think. I think that'll be enough for today. I'm going to try to do these a little bit more consistently, and because Zoom cuts you off after a half hour anyway, I think it'd be interesting to do more consistent, shorter episodes. This was episode 21 of Graham Talks Pats. I'm gonna try to get to maybe by the end of the summer, I'd like to get to like a good 40 episodes. And that's a reasonable goal. Do them a little bit more consistently, maybe, two or three times a week, for a little bit shorter like this. But it's a good one. Next time we'll probably go over my way too early 53-man roster predictions, but until then, Graham Talks Pats.